Gina Fava, when you were sitting in a classroom at Frontier Central, what made you decide you could become an adult writer?
Well, Mr. Starr introduced me to what I consider the master, Stephen King. I opened up Salem's Lot, started reading, and was scared out of my mind, and decided I really want to scare some readers as well. And I started reading and writing, and the short stories that I was writing and reading to my friends who would listen got longer and longer and longer, and now they seem to have turned into novels.
But you're married, you are a law school graduate, you have two kids. This doesn't seem like the writer's life.
There's always a story to tell, whether I'm on the road traveling from New England to Buffalo or back, or thinking about the grocery list for my kids and husband. There's always a story. There's always something that pokes its evil head out and says, write about me. And I can't help it. I can't sleep unless I do, and that's part of the fun for me. So unless I sit down and get the story out, everything else falls to pieces.
Your new book, The Sculptor, how long did it take you to do your first draft, and how long before it was ready to go to the printer?
The new book really was a quick write. I would say sitting down for the first draft, it must have taken me, I'd say, 3 months. There are two different kinds of writers, ones who use an outline and ones who write by the seat of their pants. And I am the type of person who needs some structure. So I set it down and realized this is where I want it to go. And as I sit down and write, it kind of takes on a life of its own. So I do deviate a bit, but this one was a quick one because even though it is a murder mystery with a serial killer, a lot of what's written in it is based on true events. So people, places, although names have been changed to protect the innocent, a lot of it really resonated with me as far as this was a great incident to write about. Car chases, borrowing a gondola for a day, but returning it, of course. Being chased after by the Secret Service through the streets of Rome. Some of these things needed to make it to the pages. So I'd say about 3 months to write it. It just flowed right onto the page. And then probably a good 6 months of editing.
Writers talk about, you know, the concentration. But as I said, you're married, you have kids. How can you concentrate?
They have to go to school sometime. So between those hours of, say, 7 and 2, it's throw in a load of laundry, sit down, and do nothing but. It's a lot of struggle to focus, turning the phone off, sitting down at a desk, and really getting it down on paper. And I must tell you that Panera has a lot to do with it, because when there are times where, say, they have a vacation and mom needs to get away to write, otherwise her brain's going to explode, I take a little jaunt over to Panera, settle myself into a corner, and write until my arm can't write anymore. I do a lot of it in longhand first, and then it ends up on the computer, so till my fingers fly off the keys as well.
Nothing like Wi-Fi.
It's a fun process, and where do I find the time? I believe it's the love and support of my husband and kids. They get it. They know that mom needs to do it, and they're extremely supportive of it, and they enjoy the fruits. They enjoy when mom says, would you like to hear this part? And they clamber around and listen to a part. And, of course, they pick it apart most of the time. But we have fun putting it back together again.
This is about a very bloody, violent, sexual, sadist serial killer. Do you let your kids hear all of it?
Absolutely not. I have a 10-year-old and a 15-year-old. And unlike The Race, my first book, where they were welcome to read about car races and fun things like chases through Rome, this one is something that has an NC-17 for them. The average reader, I'm sure, could handle it, but my kids are not the average readers. They're my babies, so I'm sorry they have to wait a little while.
Now, people have been writing about Rome for 2,000 years or more. In the early days, it was different, Tacitus or someone like that, or Juvenal, and I like Juvenal in college. But this is modern Rome of dysfunction and corruption and immigrants and tourists and all of this stuff. Why Rome?
Why Rome? Rome is dear to me. There are other writers who have written about Italy. There's the Nick Costa series. There's Donna Leone, who's written so many in Venice. Rome is a city that I hold dear to me. It's where I met and fell in love with my husband on a study abroad and travel thereafter. We spent much time there, not just traveling, but sitting in the cafes and drinking coffee, you know, finding the best places for a bakery, things like that, and just appreciating the architecture, which, of course, led to the sculptor. But it wasn't just meeting there. It was, we should go back on our honeymoon there and appreciate all the fine art we didn't when we were kids. We should take the kids there and live through their eyes as well. And, of course, head back for a jaunt to discover wines, which is one of our passions. It has an attraction to us that's unlike any other city. We do enjoy the rest of Italy, which is where our families herald, but Rome has a certain mystique for us that just beckons us.
The old cliche about the eternal city?
Exactly. All roads lead there, and there's nothing we can do about it except go whenever we can get the chance.
Where is your family originally from in Italy?
My father was born in a small town in Tuscany, Abbadia San Salvatore. He and his parents came at a very young age and met my mother, who's from South Buffalo. And the rest is history, but I had been begging them for the details of their story because I believe someday that would make a superb historical romance suspense story. It has all the makings for it. So someday, hopefully, the readers of WBFO will be able to enjoy that as well. There's much to it.
When you are writing this book, obviously this isn't a book that some tourist drifts through. I need 3 days of walking around the Colosseum or Trastevere or something like that. You speak Italian. Does this make for a different book?
It's different in that, as you said, it's not a tourist guidebook. It's a way of exploring the secrets and the gems that have been hidden from tourists. Maybe because I think the locals are trying to keep them secret and keep it to themselves. It's museums that have, just like the Grim Reaper on the cover of the book, was in a church, St. Peter in Chains, where Michelangelo's famous Moses sculpture stands. But there are other trappings to Rome that people aren't even aware of. And I think that's what I enjoy sprinkling through the book is streets that people may not have traveled, places
tourists may not have traveled.
Exactly. The locals are well aware of them, but again, that's why they guard them, because they are so cherished. Pieces of art, places just to watch children play in a yard with a soccer ball has the feel of something more real, I think, you know, than what tourists think of Italy. It's not just the pasta, and it's not just the, you know, the congested traffic. There are places to sit and really appreciate the sights, the smells, the sounds of the city, and hopefully that's what I try to do in the pages.
Now, your serial killer, and I'm not going to regard the end of the book, your serial killer is different because he's into classical sculpture.
It's true.
And Rome is filled with it.
It's true. And my serial killer was brought to life, I believe, in two ways. One is all of the wonderful influences that have left their mark on me, such as Thomas Harris and Douglas Preston and all of the writers of such serial killer mystiques, such as Hannibal Lecter.
Not Criminal Minds?
Criminal Minds, things that just make them, that people don't realize what makes them tick because they just don't get it. But then it's also an amalgamation of people that I've known. Someone who may have built a part of my addition in my house, or someone that I went to school with in Rome, and someone else on the street. It's a lovely amalgamation of bizarre attributes and idiosyncrasies that make someone not just a serial killer, but someone who might possibly live next door to you, someone who you might recognize, someone who's walking down the street or serves you your coffee every day. So I tried to bring him to life in a way that you could relate to as opposed to just sit back in fear of.
The only real serial killer I think I've ever dealt with was on trial, but you looked at him, or you looked in his face, and there was just nothing there. The eyes were just dead, and that's a little scary.
That is a little scary, and I think that the particular serial killer in this book is not of that variety. I think he's more of the Hannibal Lecter who fits into society as, say, a psychologist of Hannibal Lecter does. Someone who just goes, walks among us, and they don't look cold and dead. They just look average. And I think that's what's the scariest of them all, is that they walk among us.
But isn't that, in what you're writing, the kind of the basic decision? Do you write about somebody like that or some nut job who runs naked down the street, blood dripping off his hands, mostly his hands, I guess? And you have to make the choice which you want.
It's true. And I think to me, what scares me the most are those people that it's not the blood dripping off the hands and running down the street. It's more of the person whom you might have known for years. It might be the person that someone's met and has decided, oh, I find that person attractive. It's a person who maybe you even feel a bit of sympathy for. In my first book, there was a terrorist, and there are chapters that I wrote that the reader needed to feel some pathos for this person in order to stay with them through the book. And I believe that's the same with my serial killer, is it just can't be some iconic, just some symbol of madness. It has to be someone, I believe, that the reader can say, could that possibly represent a little bit of me? Which I think makes that even scarier.
Does your daughter ever say, Mom, you project this book onto the boy I'm going out with?
No, because her father isn't letting her date until she's 30, and she'll get probably a chuckle out of that. She has a level head on her shoulders, and I hope she stays away from any boy that might end up in one of my books. I try not to project too much.
When you do you, as a writer, are you one of these writers who plans out the whole book in advance, or do you just plan the first 80 words and go from there?
It's a great question. I do have a germ of an idea at the start of every book. And unfortunately, I have so many of these germs in my head that are kind of like popping like kernels, popcorn kernels. And it's the ones that really hit the hardest that need to get out first. And these two stories did start that way. Hey, you need to get these on pages. And as they unfolded from a couple pages of an outline of, this is really how I want it to start, I'd really like to flesh out these ideas and really shape these characters to be as real as possible and to live out some of these ideas that I have for them, to get to an end that really would be different and interesting and with a lot of twists. Those couple of pages turn into something that I never thought they would, but yet still come back home to something that I feel a reader would appreciate as, could this possibly happen? It's realistic, it's credible, and that's what makes it scary or thrilling, in that this could possibly have happened.
You have some experience in studying counterterrorism. Doesn't that broaden the field of what's possible in the world we live in?
It does. Having been in Rome and in certain times of our recent past have brought to light carabinieri who are standing on street corners with submachine guns strapped across their chests, and studying the terrorists that are coming into the city and not just Rome, but all around the world, these make for such interesting stories that are unfortunately too many to be told. And in light of our world's history, there are some things that if you brought them close to home, you'd wonder, well, I'd really love a hero to overcome these things. And I think that's part of the fun of the first book, is saying I'd really like to find someone who could overcome. Everybody loves a hero. Everybody loves Superman. But I wanted to make this particular person, his Devlin Lucchese and the race, someone who was human and had a son and has a life that would surpass someone else's cruel machinations for society.
Don't you have to decide whether you want to build a superhero lead character or a more realistic one?
It's true. And I think he starts out as a superhero, to be honest with you. It's some grand person in my head that, just as I was a kid watching Christopher Reeve as Superman, I'm dating myself now, but turning him into a human, putting the glasses on and realizing he has weaknesses. Maybe Devlin Lucchese doesn't have his kryptonite, or Mara Silvestri and the sculptor doesn't have kryptonite, but there are things and their past that make them human and relatable to everyday people, to readers who want to say, well, I'm going to sit on a beach, I'm going to sit on the subway, and I need a really good book, but I don't want to read about someone who is unattainable and someone that I can't really grasp and understand because they're not in my life. It might be that my hero and heroine are the people that are actually sitting next to you on the subway. These are people that maybe they are superhuman in what they think and what they believe, but they are just human and they have their faults and their weaknesses, which I think make them more endearing to us.
But they are beautiful people.
They are. I think we're all beautiful people. We all have our faults and we all have our beautiful aspirations, and in the small and the large things that we do. And whether you're saving the world or you're rescuing someone from a serial killer, there are those small things, holding someone's hand who needs it, or delivering a message to someone who needed to hear some kind words. That's in the book, too. There are things that it's not all 24/7 glitz and glamour and high-paced writing. There are some chapters where you sit down and it really makes you think about life and about your own relationships in your life.
Thank you, Gina Fava.
Thank you very much.